So you kind of get your wish. We weren't actually able to record our show because some things came up on your end, I think, before I went and had my wisdom teeth removed. So here we are 2 days afterwards, and we're talking to each other. But unfortunately, I'm not on any pain pills. So
I think it would have been much more entertaining for everybody if you would have popped a few of those before we started.
It's really weird. It's like I took them the first day, and then I basically have only taken two of the pain pills, and that's really all I've needed. So I guess it went okay. I'm just ready to eat real food and not just soft things now.
Go for it. I think you should eat some beef jerky and steak tonight.
That might be a little bit too much. But what's really weird is, like, you roll your tongue to the back of your mouth, and you're not feeling teeth that used to be there, and so it's just kind of weird.
And you want to know something really funny is you're always going to have that space back there.
Yeah, and it's so weird. I'm just going to have to get some used to it. It just feels like it's a little tight. It's just like a little tight. And I guess it's from the stitches and stuff, but
yeah,
and everything's okay.
What you'll notice, though, is it's going to be a lot easier to floss all your other teeth because they'll relax some and there'll be a small gap between them all.
Oh, so I won't be like jerking the floss tip.
Yeah, you won't like break it when you try to pull it out. It'll actually come out.
Yeah, and I'm worried about doing the ones in the back where I just had some fillings done and actually pulling the filling out. Because I'm doing it too hard, so maybe that'll
Worst case, we got some super glue.
Yeah, it's like I was at Home Depot looking at pliers, and I was like, I wonder if I can just pull these teeth out myself. But probably not a good idea.
Help you.
Probably not a good idea.
It wouldn't hurt me at all.
But some follow-up, I believe like last week or the week before, we actually talked about how we would love to have some Chrome OS on some tablets, and actually Asus or Acer, one of the two, is actually making some. Well, it looks like today Chrome OS 64 is rolling out, version 64, which you've been running since you've been on the beta channel. It's actually a lot focused towards tablet features, and so it looks like that tablet that we saw at CES might actually be one of those things from CES that actually come to fruition, and we might actually get to see it in the market.
Yeah, it's really cool. And like I carry around the Asus C302, and it's one of those yoga style. It flips around backwards. And the launcher on it is a much more Android-like launcher. You can swipe up from the bottom, and you get a list of icons that are apps. And you have the Android apps along with the Chrome OS apps listed in there. And when you do have it flipped around and you touch on a space, you get a traditional on-screen keyboard. It works really well. And honestly, I can't see the point of any Android tablet existing anymore.
No, not when Chrome OS is providing everything that you need, especially with it running Android apps. And in fact, the article that we'll link to in the show notes actually says that sometime last month they released an update that allowed Chrome OS to actually run Android apps in the background.
Yes, it does work.
So, I mean, that's just opening up a whole new world of possibilities for the Chrome OS devices, especially in our schools.
Yeah, there are some oddities, like I do a recording of our podcast on a Chromebook, and the microphone is not actually detected by the Android subsystem. It's detected by the Chrome OS subsystem. So, like noise cancellation, those kind of things, I don't get to use in the Android apps themselves because it doesn't see any of those features available on the microphone.
But that's okay. I sort of make it work. But maybe those sorts of things will kind of open up more as the tablet and the Android app environment sort of intertwine more.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe they'll just ditch it all and just go straight fuchsia.
And it makes me wonder if Apple is kind of seeing this and kind of, because the rumor is there's this big rumor that pretty soon we're going to be able, and supposedly this year, we're going to be able to run iOS apps on Mac OS.
Well, I heard rumor today. The MacBook Air was discontinued, so it could be re-released with iOS.
That is actually a kind of a want for a lot of iPad users that I listen to on podcasts. They actually talk about, and one of the thing is that the new version of iOS is coming out, 11.3, I think, actually drops the iBooks name and actually goes to just Books for the iBook app. And so everybody's wondering, like, is Apple about to reuse the iBook name that used to be a hardware product into this new iPad laptop, or iOS laptop? So it makes me wonder if that's kind of what's happening. But, I mean, I run my iPad on the keyboard all the time in horizontal mode, which kind of irritates me because the Apple logo is kind of for vertical. It should be turned horizontal. But I always have the keyboard on it. And so I don't see why it would be a bad thing to have an iOS laptop. Be very handy.
I think if anybody could actually pull it off and have the design look right and feel right, I think Apple could pull off a better yoga designed laptop than anybody else has before running iOS, and it would be far more useful than anything else.
Or it could be one of those things like the Chromebook does. It's like it's running Chrome OS, but then when you flip that screen completely around, maybe it'll kind of do something in the software will actually kind of switch to iOS.
Yeah, and there's nothing preventing them from doing that. I mean, iOS looks more like macOS than it ever has before now, too.
Yeah, and they're just sort of implementing those iCloud features to kind of just kind of bridge the two together. And there's a lot of rumors of and because the new iMac Pro actually has an ARM chip in it for some booting security stuff in it. So it makes me wonder if maybe, and there's been more rumors about creating more Macs in the lineup that actually have the dual chips, the ARM chip and the Intel-based chip,
yeah,
or x86-based chip.
That was one of their focuses for this year and next year, was introducing more coprocessors,
well,
which that makes so much sense because then they could both be native.
Well, I went to a iPad configurator kind of conference thing at our region center probably sometime last year, and this was back during we were having the Mac drought. We weren't having any new Macs, and so and a guy from Apple actually came and kind of led the thing. And so afterwards, I went up to him and said, "Hey, are we going to see any love to the Macs anytime soon?" He's like, "Look, they're coming." He said, "The next 18 months are going to be really exciting for the Mac," and I think it's been 18 months since this, and we've seen some new Macs. He says. And I said, does the delay of Intel actually getting their chips done and or getting enough, being able to mass market the chips that it needs, sort of a problem? He's like, yeah, that's kind of the issue. But there's also, we in Apple, we sort of, this is kind of paraphrasing his words. He says, we at Apple kind of see a future where not only are we necessarily running on chips designed by somebody else, but maybe chips designed by us. And so it's like, and there's always been that rumor, and it's actually in the code for macOS that mm-hmm. macOS on ARM. So it's coming. It'll come eventually. And I think what you're talking about, this Air being discontinued, I haven't seen this yet, so now I'm kind of peaked. I actually want to go read about it. And this could be it. This could be the turning point. But
and I don't see it being a problem because Apple, when they were running PowerPC chips, always had a branch of macOS that was already ready for x86 because they always want to have that way out if there's an issue with their supply chain where they can continue their production and things go pretty smooth. So I imagine the ARM build for macOS works just fine. I mean, I can't see any problems with it. I mean, it is a Unix subsystem, so, I mean, they just recompile it for the new processor architecture and things would work. Now, if they're utilizing some of the Intel-specific instructions like they have in the past for what it used to be called Quartz and their display renderers and whatnot. I imagine those things would have to be rewritten, but I don't see any problem. I think they could do the turnaround within a month and have everything working because I know they're doing it in the background.
I don't think macOS, the operating system itself, is probably going to be the holdup. I think it's going to be the software, like the other applications. Like, I don't know how well Logic is going to run on a macOS running ARM or Final Cut or things like that.
And I don't see them making those run because I can see the first ones coming out being those more Ultrabook style compute, the light duty computing. And I can see it having kind of like, remember Rosetta that they had to run the PowerPC apps on the x86? I can see it having the same thing. But when you start doing x86 emulation, Intel gets real scary and real Sue happy quickly. So I'm not sure how they're going to handle it.
But what is this? Who's this device going to be directed to? It's not going to be directed to the heavy PC users. I mean, they got the Pro lineup for that.
I think it's going to be directed about 90% of Apple's users. I mean, because how many people buy a MacBook as a Facebook machine?
Yeah, I mean, and that's really what it's going to be. They just need to be able to drop that price down and to be able to compete with like everybody else.
And if they're running a custom designed ARM chip that they've made, They're not having to share profit margins with anybody else, so they could either A, keep it the same price and make more profit, or actually drop the price and make it more enticing and keep the same profit level.
And to kind of counteract the ability to run Pro apps or whatever, if it's going to have the ability to run iOS apps on it, I mean, there's a lot of apps on there that are kind of Pro-related. I mean, there's pretty much, there's Affinity Photo, there's Pixelmator Pro, or not Pixelmator Pro, but there's Pixelmator. There's a lot of things that you can do on iOS that's kind of pro related. I mean, Ferrite, that's an audio editing app that's pretty. They can do a lot of things that Logic can do, and so the market's there. I think, and Apple, I think, can pull it off if they just actually do it. They just need to show love to the Mac.
Yeah, and but backing away from the pro apps, doesn't Apple have like GarageBand and those whole series of apps on iOS pretty much feature level parity? Yeah,
pretty much. I mean, a lot of the things, iMovie, GarageBand, iWork Suite, that all runs on iOS just fine with the same like a lot of features that the desktop has. You may not have all the fonts.
Oh, that's okay. But I can see most users being okay with that because they're probably already using it now. And if it's actually on a clamshell platform, and gosh, Apple, if you do this, please add a touchscreen to the clamshell.
But, well, if they make an iOS laptop, it'll be their first touchscreen.
Well,
laptop
I can see them doing something crazy like the touchscreen is the trackpad.
Oh, like the touch bar?
Yeah.
Which like, I think is a total fail.
Hold up. Just got a thought. You remember that crazy concept video from a few years ago where they had like the OLED keyboard?
Oh, yes. I remember seeing that.
There you go. There's their out from having a touchscreen.
Why would you even do an OLED keyboard? Just do e-ink. I mean,
because they want full color. I mean, they got the touch bar that's OLED.
Who cares if your keyboard is in color?
So it can do those nice rainbow gamer effects, right?
I guess. Because it's one thing that Apple really cares about is the gaming community.
You're right. Well, you know what? I think they care more than you think because iOS is a huge gaming platform. I saw Nintendo's going to be releasing Mario Kart on iOS.
Yeah, in like a year.
Well,
and if it's anything, if it kind of goes the route of like Mario, when Mario came, Super Mario Run, I mean, that wasn't as big a hit as I think Nintendo wanted it to be.
Wasn't that just one of those games where you tap and he jumps?
Yeah, that's pretty much all it is. And so I wonder if like Mario Kart's just going to be one of those things where you tap and he turns.
I think they should go like the Pokemon AR route and make it to where everybody has to run in circles.
That would be kind of funny. But, I mean, there's really no sense why Mario Kart, and actually the whole Mario Kart, couldn't be ported. I mean, you have your brake and your fire, your go button, and you turn the device to make it steer.
And if we're really honest, I mean, the Mario Kart that's on the Switch right now came from the Wii U.
But it's
the
deluxe.
iPhone X, it just has all the DLC with it. But the iPhones are more powerful than the Wii U was. So, I mean, there's
I mean, there's iPhones that are actually more powerful than laptops. So I mean,
in fact, most iPhones are probably just as powerful, if not more powerful, than the Switch is. The only thing the Switch has really got going is that NVIDIA GPU.
Yeah, isn't it like that Tegra? I think that it has in it.
Yeah, it's one of the Tegras. So they're good stuff.
Yeah, that's a pretty. Yeah, NVIDIA makes pretty good graphics stuff.
Yeah, even though I'm a Radeon fanboy.
Yeah, that's okay. We'll get you converted.
You know, I like the underdog every time.
Hey, they're making a comeback. I mean, we've talked about that many times. So how's your stock doing? Very good?
Well, since I purchased it and told people to purchase it, it's up 37%.
So, hey, that's a good investment.
But I am not a financial advisor. And if you want to see any evidence of that, go look at the cryptos this week.
Yeah, we're not even going to talk about that. I heard it cratered again.
God, it hurts. I'm still up, but gosh, that hurts.
I heard the article I saw, it said that it's kind of crashing and nobody knows when it's going to stop crashing.
Well, if anybody listens to this is interested in this. The reason it's doing it right now is India just made all cryptos illegal tender in their country.
Oh, that's what's going to shut the whole thing down.
And there's a lot of people in India if you didn't know that.
Yeah, lots of people. Now, and I guess if China was to do the same thing, then you know it's just pretty much murdered at that point. There's no coming back.
Well, China did do a thing to all the exchanges. That was one of the crashes later in the year last year. But and then South Korea did some exchange laws 2 weeks ago, and then of course in December we did the new tax code that took in the crypto stuff and. Yeah, so now I have to go through like 500 transactions before I can do my taxes this year, which is all sorts of goodness there.
But. Yeah, so it's just if you don't want the headache, don't get involved in crypto.
Don't get involved in it. But I am glad that the GPU that I listed on eBay to sell sold the day before this crash because it probably wouldn't afterwards.
Yeah, you got good money for it, so that's all that matters.
I got out of it before I got stuck with it.
Yeah, so... last week, we kind of teased that we were going to kind of do a special episode. We're actually going to do two special episodes. We're going to do a two-part series. We're going to do Tools of the Trade. We talked about last week how we're going to talk about the things that we carry in our bag. I'm going to cheat a little bit because I actually carried two bags, but one of them is mainly just a tool bag. So I'm not going to really talk about the tool bag in detail because it's kind of a mess anyway. But we actually have some photos that we're going to throw in the show notes of your bag and my bag. And you actually cleaned up your bag a little bit. You emptied everything out, lined it all up nice and neat for me. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I couldn't let the users actually know what my bag looks like.
I was just worried you were just going to take it, dump it all out on the table, leave a pile, and take a picture and send it to me.
I did do that before I took the picture, but then I was like, you know,
straighten it up a little bit.
I'm not even going to be able to make a list of what's in here if I do that.
All right, so you go first. Tell us what's in your bag and what kind of bag you actually carry.
Well, I actually carry a full bag, F-U with the little bar above it, L. And I like this bag because the clips and the nylon reinforcements on it are all extra reinforced because I carry about 45 pounds in it all day, and I'm really good at ripping bags because of that.
Yeah, I've broken a few backpacks myself. So
yeah, Ugios don't like to carry that weight. As much as I like how the Ugios look, they just don't like that kind of weight.
Yeah,
and you'll see why it weighs so much, because I just carry ridiculously stupid things in my bag. It doesn't make sense why I have some of this in there, but it's in there nonetheless. Yeah. But I do have another bag that has some of the tools that you're going to go, well, why do you have that in here, but you need this for it to work? And, well, that's in the other bag.
Yeah, that's kind of the same situation I'm in. It's like I have, like, my laptop bag is mainly just for my laptop and those sorts of things. And whenever I go out around the campuses or whatever and do some jobs, I actually have another bag that I bring with me. But I do carry some tools in my laptop bag for those things that kind of pop up, or if I'm out and about somewhere and I need things.
Yeah, like I do carry quite a bit of tools in mine. Like right now, there's actually three Phillips screwdrivers in there. Why do I need three Phillips screwdrivers in my bag? But there are there. But
it looks
anyway.
Like you have your toner, your punch down, and I don't. I
want
to know why.
But there's not an Ethernet crimp in there. That's in the other bag.
I know. It's like, I want to know why you carry this punch down. It's like, have you not realized that the best punch downs are those little plastic ones that actually come in the package with the jacks?
I hate those things.
I love them. To me, those are the best.
And honestly, I don't like this punch down. My favorite punch down I keep at the house, because I'll lose it here, is a really cheap one that's not even an impact one. It's completely manual.
In fact, that is, I kind of feel the same way about my crimpers. My favorite crimpers, which I don't carry in my bag because I like them, I carry them in my other bag that I want to use all the time, are the cheap ones that don't have like the little snap crunch sound that when you actually get all crimped.
You don't sound like you're destroying things.
Yeah, it's like, I just like my little cheap stuff. It's fine.
Yeah, and then I think that's because I cut my teeth on it before I was actually in the field professionally. I was doing it freelance, and so I had cheap tools, and that's what I got used to using.
And they're just as good.
Yeah, they work. They do the job. They don't have the fancy stuff. But I guess I'll just kind of start from the top. I mean, I know I've mentioned this thing quite a bit because I'm actually on it right now. But a laptop in there is an Asus Chromebook. It's a C302. It's got one of the Core M's, 4 gig of RAM, aluminum chassis. Looks beautiful. Love it.
It does look nice.
And because it's got a case of dongle fever too, I do have to carry one of the USB dock with it, and I have an AUKEY. It's AUKEY. It's a USB-C dock that has three USB 3 ports, one Type-C port, a USB 2 port, and HDMI out. I use that so I can connect in console cables, even to projectors for when I teach class, because this is my daily driver, this Chromebook. It's insane that I do that, but it does work. So along with that, I have a StarTAC USB Ethernet adapter. It's one of those adapters that just kind of works with every device without having to have a driver. Thank goodness. I can even plug it into my smartphone and it'll work Ethernet. I love it. And then we'll go ahead and get to some of the weirdness that I have in there.
Yeah, you see, just kind of an overview. You got a bunch of cables like Cat5, USB cables, speaker cables.
Yeah, I got every type USB cable in there and Cat5. I think I had a ridiculous amount of 6 foot Cat 5 and Cat 6 cables in my bag. I usually end up handing them out like candy when people ask for them. But a piece of equipment afterwards is a Tytera MD380. It's a DMR mobile transceiver. It's the radios we use here at the school, but I also use them for my ham gear. So I have my own personal one that I carry. So I have my school channels on it that we talk on, along with my personal ham stuff on it. I like it. It's great to program. I even have the programming cable with me, so if I need to make some changes on somebody's school radio, I can do it right from my bag without having to go back to do anything.
That's like the one thing I don't have. It's like everybody has radios around here, but I don't have a radio. And so I just get text messages or phone calls. It's like, maybe I just need a radio.
Yeah, I like the radio because I work with maintenance quite a bit, so I can just hit them up on the radio and they'll give me an answer right then about where something is, or if I need have an electrical problem, I can hit them up on the radio. Or Lord knows Verizon's oversubscribed in our area. Verizon's not working like it wasn't the other day when a fiber got cut in the river.
Yeah.
My radio is always going to work.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, the next weird thing I have in there, I have a nylon cord, and you would not believe how handy this thing comes in. It's just a 30-foot piece of nylon cord that's 1,500-pound test, and it came out of, you know, those orange tubes that you run fiber through in the ceilings?
Yeah.
It's just the inner cord that's inside of there.
It's pull rope.
Why? Why they have a pull rope for fiber that's 1,500-pound test, I have no idea. Can you imagine pulling 1,500 pounds on a piece of fiber and expecting it to survive?
Yeah, they just want to just up the price in the conduit. So,
well, I use it all the time, from tying things down to carts to actually tying a cart down onto the top of my tonneau cover.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it works great. Comes in handy. Personal thing in there next, my Rokin Bluetooth earbuds. I love these things because I can put one in at a time and actually listen to like a radio show or something while I'm doing work. I don't have to wear two of them, but I do have my backup cheapy Samsung wired earbuds that I'm using right now. The Galaxy S6 freebies.
Yeah,
I think I got like 50 of them at home. And FTDI USB serial adapter, so I can plug in my traditional console adapter. I don't use a Cisco one that's blue. I use a Dell one because I like black cables. So, yeah, don't carry the blue one. I have a black one. I have a clip-on LED light, and I like this one because I'm up in the ceiling a lot doing cabling work, and I can, like, just clip it on the ring of my collar, and wherever I'm looking, I have light. It's kind of dorky, but yeah.
Yeah, that would be very handy. I need to get one of those because I usually have to use the flashlight on my phone. I used to do that a lot, but
you remember when I was doing the cafeteria cabling last year? I kept losing my phone up in the ceiling. I would have to get my watch and walk around to find it.
Yeah, I'm sure
that's when I threw this in my.
I've got lots of stuff in my ceiling too that I've left up there.
Yeah, but I kept losing my phone in the ceiling. I hated that.
Yeah. And I always leave the flashlight on and stick it back in my pocket.
Yeah, and then you're like, why is my leg so hot?
Yeah, and somebody walks by and says, hey, your flashlight's on. And I'm like, oh, because I can kind of see it shining through the jeans or whatever.
At least they didn't ask you if you're excited or anything.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
So some more of the weirdness that I have in there. I mean, we went over, I had some audio cables, some Cat 6 cables. I have a Chromecast stick in there. And believe it or not, I've used this a time or two when presenters come by or something and they want to present on something, slap that bad boy in there and they can just mirror to it. Some other weirdness, I have 3 Intel Compute Sticks. You know, they suck.
Yeah.
That's why they're in my bag, because I took them away from something, but they've just sat in my bag, and I don't know if my bag would know what to do without them. I think they're friends at this point.
In fact, going through all these images or whatever, I was like, why is this in my bag? And I actually took it out. It's like, I have 2 of these. Why do I have 2 of these in my bag?
I know. The Intel Compute Sticks will not be in my bag after today, because I just don't need the weight. I mean, the thing's heavy enough.
I mean, you got some... sockets, you got 3 screwdrivers.
I got a socket set in there.
You even carry the wall mount boxes for
yeah,
network.
I do have I have a flush mount wall box with the Keystone plate and an HDMI Keystone jack and a Cat 6 Keystone jack in my bag at all times.
You see, I carry the jacks like that stuff in my tool bag.
Well, I should. Because it doesn't make sense putting them in here, but this bag is—it's always on my shoulder. So when I need something, I throw it in there.
Yeah, and yeah, I kind of have the same habit.
See, we'll blow through some of this real quick. Yeah, punch down tool, cable tester, cable toner with a mod cable. Because why in the world do they give you cable testers that don't test on the brown pairs? I don't know. It just doesn't make sense. Why are we testing on the blue pairs? That just jacks up switches.
Yeah.
So I have a little mod cable in there to switch it to the brown cables. Some electrician scissors.
Oh, those are the
tiny
best.
Screwdriver. Big screwdriver. Like you said, a socket set. That thing's too heavy. That needs to get out of my bag.
Yeah, but the second you take it out, that's when you're going to need it.
You're right. And I have some HID installation keys for our Prox card doors.
Yeah.
Because I'm scared if I put them anywhere else, they're going to get lost. And I'd have to change all the doors if I lose those.
Yeah.
And then the most important thing, I have a black spiral notebook with a pencil because pens suck.
Yeah, I agree. I use pencils all the time, but in my bag I actually carry a pen. I don't know why. I actually carry two types of pens. I carry a Tide pen and an ink pen. Not just an ink pen.
Oh, a Tide pen. I was thinking Tide pen. I know what you're talking about now.
It's like, so if you get a stain on something, you get the Tide pen out and you can do that. But yeah, man, you got a pretty intense heavy bag.
Yeah, and I think that's why my neck hurts a lot of the time now that I'm looking at this list. I mean, the list is 36 lines long. I mean,
that's not quite that long.
Oh, yeah. Close. My notepad when I sent you the pictures, it has a little text thing that says my bag packed above it.
There you go. Yeah, we'll put.
So what's in yours, dude?
Mine is, well, obviously, I carry a MacBook Pro 13-inch early 2015 version with Retina display. Love it. Also carry the iPad Pro 10.5 inch with the smart keyboard, Apple Pencil, all that stuff. Both of those things sit inside of an laptop sleeve. And the laptop sleeve goes into my Timbuktu classic messenger bag. I just like the messenger look. I carried a backpack around for a while, but like I said, I broke a clip on one of the shoulder straps, and I was just like, well, I'll just use a messenger bag. I carry a Triplight mobile power strip kind of charger thing that has some like USB ports and stuff like that, so I don't have to carry as many USB charger cables for everything that needs to be charged, like the Verizon MiFi that I carry, carry a Magic Mouse too, and of course my AirPods, for the same reason that you carry your wireless headphones. You can use one at a time or you can use both at a time, and with them being wireless, they're either in the bag or they're in my pocket, but they're usually with me. Of course, I live in Dongletown, so I've got a bunch of dongles too. The only two that I have for the Mac are I have the Thunderbolt to Gigabit Ethernet adapter, and I have the mini display to VGA port, so if I need to hook up to a projector or something for testing. The other ones are more or less for the iPad. I've got the Lightning to USB 2 and the Lightning to USB 3.0. With the 2-1, I actually have a fast Ethernet adapter to be able to plug the iPad into a network. And then for the USB 3 one, I actually have a gigabit Ethernet adapter. Reason why I don't just carry the one adapter is because the 3.0 adapter and the gigabit actually has to have power pass through too to be able to power it. And so a lot of times I just want to plug into a switch real quick or plug into a drop to make sure it works. And I don't want to have to fumble with a lightning cable, which I carry three of those with me too, to give power to the iPad to be able to fire up the gigabit adapter. The device will fire up the fast Ethernet.
You know, I've always been interested in the Ethernet adapters for the iPad. I mean, what all can you do with them?
Basically, you can do whatever you want to with it. I mean, when you plug it in under the settings, you get another thing under the network. So you get an Ethernet, it just sort of pops up. You could set static IPs, you can do proxy settings, whatever you want to do. And
well,
so
that's cool.
You don't even have to connect to Wi-Fi at that point. You can actually turn your Wi-Fi off and it'll still work straight through pass-through. In fact, that's how I think Apple distributed iOS 11 at WWDC, was they provided like stations where you can actually bring your iPad, go Ethernet into it and download it a lot faster instead of getting it over Wi-Fi. And so I think they added the Ethernet feature in iOS 9, maybe, and maybe 10, I know. And then this one podcast I listen to, they're basically an all iPad school, and so when they come to testing or whatever, they have to, like, print out some kind of certificate or something. So whenever the kids are done with their tests, they go up to this little station, plug this little thing in, and do the little print thing, and they can find the network printer and print the thing out, and they just unplug and go. So,
you know, that'd be cool, because then you would prevent kids from just going and printing onto it from the Wi-Fi, kind of, like, isolate that printer physically.
Yeah,
kind of like double checking. Hey, are you really done? Okay, yeah, then you can plug in.
It's a lot handy. I use it a lot mainly for just testing drops. Like I need, because when we were moving all these people around, I had to test some drops in a building to see if they were hot or not. It's a lot easier to carry the iPad around in with a little dongle and a cable. Instead of lugging out that laptop and plugging everything in, because you know I got to use a dongle for that too, and so it's just a little bit less cumbersome using a tablet to test those things instead of using the laptop. But
and, you know, and that's one of the primary reasons I moved to this Chromebook is just because it's easier to get in and out and use it real quick.
Yeah. One of the strange things that I carry toothpaste and toothbrush in mine. And before anybody asks me about not having the toothbrush in a container, I've never actually used this toothbrush. This is sort of like the emergency toothbrush for some reason if I need to brush my teeth for some reason. It's there if I actually need it, and a lot of times it gets run under hot water beforehand, and so. But I've never had to use this one because nothing's ever come up.
I guess you could like do some emergency mouthwash with the toothpaste. You could, like squirt a little on your tongue, take a drink of water, and swish it around.
But this is kind of like the emergency stash in case like I'm about to have a meeting or something, and I just ate some onions, need to take care of it. Carry Tylenol, and then in the pill bottles, other than the Tylenol, the actual two pill prescription bottles are actually RJ 45 clips and RJ11 clips. I've been looking for some containers to be able to carry these clips around, and I found that pill bottles actually are the best thing that I've found for these. They fit about 10 of them.
I bet absolutely nobody steals them either.
No, it's great. And then there's my cable tester, which actually tests all the pairs. It doesn't just ignore the brown pair. It tests, but it's kind of like a simple tester. It just kind of makes sure that they're all terminated on both ends. It's nothing real fancy. My little multi-bit screwdriver is what I carry. The crimp tools that I don't like to use, I carry in this bag. I carry the Cisco cable, because I like the blue cable. And then I have the USB to serial adapter that I have to use. I use the Triplight 19HS, I think, is the brand.
I know. I actually know exactly which one that one is. It's kind of like shaped like a little trapezoid. It actually has the full serial plug on the end with kind of like some little ends coming over it a little.
Yeah, and I actually had to mod it a little bit because I found like the board that you – it's one of those ones without the USB cable built into it, and so you can unplug it. I actually found that like the more you use it, like the tightness of the USB fit – doesn't work, so I kind of super glued the outside of the USB cable and shoved it into the adapter, and so now it's just kind of permanently stuck in there.
Oh, I love it.
but the strange thing that I carry, the other strange thing that I carry around is I carry a Thunderbolt cable to be able to hook up two Thunderbolt devices. Now, there's like three or four Macs in this school. I don't know why.
You're just looking for the opportunity to be able to use this thing.
And I literally went, and this is one of those, why did you buy this, Matt? This is one of those $40 cables at Apple sales that I've bought for a one-time use. Whenever I got this laptop, I transferred all of my stuff from my other laptop over the Thunderbolt cable just because I wanted to see how fast it could be. And
it took like, 4 seconds,
yeah,
right?
It was super fast. And so I was just like, well, I got the cable. I might as well just carry it around with me.
Might as well. I mean, it's a good cable. Yeah, plus, you could use it as a USB-C cable, right? Or is it the actual old school?
It's the Thunderbolt 2 cable.
Okay,
it's not
so
the Thunderbolt
3. Display port cable.
Yeah, and then I carry a Cat 6 cable, too. So I have a blue one, and I have a purple one. But in my picture, I took the purple one out. You know, that's one of those things. It's like, why do I carry duplicate cables? But more than likely...
Did you notice what color my Cat 6 cables were, too?
Blue.
Black.
Everything.
I like my black cables.
All your black cables. I actually use
my
black
mic, my black cable, and the only thing that's not is this dang Chromebook. It's silver. So I guess I need to like spray paint it or something.
But the keyboard's black, so I mean, it's okay.
It is black. You know, black on black would be kind of tough, especially if I spray painted it. I wouldn't be able to type anymore.
Yeah, you don't do that. But yeah, I like my black cables, so I actually use them for my stuff, like my desktop, my dock station where I have my laptop and stuff set up. I actually use the black cables. But it's just kind of interesting to see, like, your perspective, like, running Chrome OS and my perspective running Mac OS. I mean, we both have dongles for everything. I don't have to have as many dongles because I do have some ports left still on this laptop. Now, my next one probably won't have any, but... But it's just
interesting. I don't have a bunch of dongles. I just have one really big dongle.
But it's just interesting that we're both kind of living the same lifestyle. It's like we're managing Windows networks with like non-Windows devices. Now, granted, you have a Windows desktop set up in your office that you use for things. I have a Windows desktop set up in my office that I use for different things. And a lot of times I just remote into that desktop to do things.
Yeah, I'm kind of excited about our part two of this because we also run very different environments from each other, so our tools are going to be very different that we use daily too.
Yeah, the part two of this Tools of the Trade little series that we're doing is actually, these are like the hardware tools that we carry in our bag and stuff, but next week we're actually going to talk about the software things that we use to get our tasks done. And me coming from the Mac side, I have a lot of Mac stuff. You coming from Google
crazy
and Windows,
town, we'll say
crazy town, it's like you use a lot of cloud-based stuff. And
I do.
So
I have a lot of hosted stuff that I use.
But you see, you've always been that way. You just want to host everything. It's like, I want native apps for everything. In fact, the apps that you write for mobile devices, they're all web apps. They all have to be done on the web. And I like native apps.
Yeah, and in fact, I wrote some new digital signage applications this week, and guess what they were written in? JavaScript and Node WebKit. Yeah. So it's a
web app.
It's just another packaged web app.
But yeah, and that's the reason why I held on to Outlook for so long, was because I like web apps. It's like, I don't know why. It's like, I don't even use I don't even use Gmail on the web. I use it in Mac Mail, which is a horrible experience, but somehow I just deal with it.
You know what? Apple can write some awesome software. How have they done what they've done to Mail?
And I don't really want to talk about Mail, but I'll talk about Mail.
Know. And I know we need. All right, guys, this episode's going to be about 3 hours now. We're bringing up Mail.
Yeah. The thing about Apple Mail is, it's like, out of everything that they're trying to unify the macOS and iOS experience, how come the Mail experience on both devices is so drastically different? I don't understand.
But what's crazy to me is the Mail experience on iOS is fantastic.
It is.
The Mail experience on macOS is god awful.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. But
I'm not going to mention any names, but where I was before, there was a person whose name was on the company, and he liked Apple, and he liked Apple Mail, but he didn't like deleting mail.
Yeah.
So his IMAP inbox had like 25,000 unread messages in it.
Yeah, I think I remember talking about that, and that's just a lot of mail. But I think in Apple's defense, just a little bit, I will say this. Google, which seems to be like the majority of mail providers that we use, they do some funny stuff with IMAP. So I can't fully blame Apple for a miserable experience with Google Mail on Apple Mail, but
I don't think Google can spell IMAP.
But
I mean,
just crazy. Their implementation
is just
weird. But they got
it fixed in iOS where they're actually using the Google type mail.
Yeah,
but you know what? I got another bone to pick. Speaking of, you brought up Google and Mail. I'm mad at them still for taking away ActiveSync support. You remember we used to use ActiveSync protocol with Gmail. And that was phenomenal.
Well,
it fixed the IMAP awfulness, but now we don't even get that.
Well, it's still there, sort of.
I can't make it work in my environment.
You can't. Well, I think I still can. And like, if you had it on your personal account, I think if you had it turned on before a certain date, I think it'll still work. But if you hadn't turned it on before then, it doesn't work anymore. And I think it's still there for like enterprise environments like ours. So, I mean, we might have to look into that. I'm going to have to dig into
that.
Yeah,
I'm really curious because, of course, I'm just using the Gmail app anyway. But,
you know, you don't want to do it anyway. It's better to set it up as a Google account anyway, because some things just don't work right when you set it up as ActiveSync.
Weird. Options, because what if I want to switch back to Linux and start running my old school GroupWise client?
Oh, well, you don't want to do that.
I might get a wild hair one day.
No, you won't.
And install Ubuntu on this little Chromebook and watch it cry.
But like, the only thing I think you will gain out of using ActiveSync is push for getting mail. Like right now, Gmail can only do fetch or manual, and so I think when you set up with ActiveSync, you can get push.
Well,
but you lose so much.
The native Gmail app on Android has push support because they have their own protocol for that thing. But like on my Samsung, if I'm using the Samsung Mail, it adds the account in IMAP, and it does ask for application support. You know how you have to authorize new apps and whatnot to where this Samsung app can get push notifications, but it's still an IMAP client, so you don't. Yeah, I don't know. That's a whole episode.
But I think you said it when you said that there's the Gmail app on the phone, and I think that's Google's excuse not to really care, because there's the Gmail app for Android, there's the Gmail app for iOS, and so if you want the push to get the notifications when the mail comes in directly, they'll encourage you to use their app. So
yeah, they're like, suck it up, Buttercup, install Gmail.
But you know, I kind of like, well, it has its good sides and its bad sides. It's like, I like not getting messages every time they come in. I don't like getting a notification, but I don't like getting one notification and open the mail app, seeing one email, and all of a sudden 15 more of them show up.
Especially when like three of them were like an email chain on the first one.
Yeah, so it's like you get like an email dump every 15 minutes, and sometimes it's kind of annoying.
And the third one's like, never mind.
Yeah, it's so like as you're answering the first one, there's the third one that comes in that says, never mind, I figured it out. So
I got one of those today.
Yeah. But that's our show this week. That's sort of just kind of an overview of what's in our bag. We'll include some links to some pictures and kind of the list of the things that are in it. Next week, we'll talk about the software that we use to do what we do. And so we're just kind of comparing and contrasting our two environments. But if you have any feedback or if you have any direct questions as to what's in our bag that we didn't really cover, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I am at @TwistOfMatt and Chris is at @Feeks. Reach out to the show at Educating Tech. Visit educatingtech.net to see past episodes or links to subscribe. This week, I'll give a shout out to Apple Podcast. I've actually dropped the app that I was using and switched back to Apple Podcasts because apparently you get some new podcast analytics or something that you can kind of see some things. And so I kind of wanted to see that experience. And it's getting a little bit better. And with my new car and CarPlay, it actually provides the best CarPlay experience for listening to podcasts. And so that's kind of why I switched back to that. So this week I'll give a shout out to subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts. There should actually be a little link, maybe a little badge. I think they took the badge off, but I might have to add the badge back. But that's it. And we'll see you next week. See you later, Chris.
See you later, Matt.